The Jewish year is symmetrical. I'm sure you've worked that one out by now, that we have 6 months leading up to Nisan, and we then have 6 months leading up to Tishrei, and the whole thing is parallel 1 6 months to the other, to Ba'av, parallels to Bishvat, etc. And one of the things that the Meforshim stress is that Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot is a process of tshuva, miyira, yimei din, tshuva miyira, whereas Pesach is a process of tshuva mi'ahava. It's a whole different feel. That's why it shouldn't feel on Seder night like it's Yom Hadin. Sometimes people come into Pesach feeling like it's Yom Hadin, but that's not right. There is a mitzvah to feel a sense of simcha when you go into the Seder, and therefore the month of Adar is parallel to the month of Elul. And I think we have to remember that, that just as Elul is a preparation for a tshuva mi'yira, for yimei din, Adar has to be a preparation for a tshuva mi'ahava. And it fulfills that role, which is one of the reasons of besimcha, mishinichnas Adar marbin besimcha, and it's one of the reasons why Purim does exactly what it does. And therefore, I'd like to speak a little bit about the ahava aspect of Purim, the preparation, and we'll see soon, Chazal stress the idea of Kabbalah HaTorah. Baruch Hashem, this Adar, we have lots to be grateful for. This time, Rosh Hashanah last year, we were thinking, is it going to rain, is it not going to rain, is there going to be Brocha? And thank God, for November and December, we were davening. And Baruch Hashem, there's been an enormous amount of Brocha in the rain. They're talking about opening the Secher in the Kinneret, in Yet Hashem, in a couple of weeks, for the first time since 1992. Okay, there are challenges still ahead, we know that, but we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the time, for sure, and therefore this, I think, can help us increase even the idea of Simcha and Ahava that we feel in Ahava. So let's have a look first at the issue of Kabbalah HaTorah. Number one. Everybody knows Shavuot is Kabbalah HaTorah. Although, of course, really, the Torah that we received on Shavuot didn't last long. In terms of the Ten Commandments, it was already gone by Sheva after the Tammuz, and we really had to get the Torah again on Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur is really also as a man Matan Torah. But in the lead-up to Shavuot, we see number one, Vayisu Merafidim, they, plural, traveled from Rafidim, Vayavo'u, and they, plural, came Midbar Sinai, into the Midbar, Vayachanu, and they, plural, camped, Bamidbar, Vayichan, and he, singular, camped Sham, there, Yisrael camped there, Negid Ha'har. That shift from three plural verbs into a singular verb is where we get this whole idea of Ki'ish Echad, Balei Bechad, there was a unity, there was an actus of the preparation for Matan Torah. And this is paralleled by a similar shift in grammar that we find in Megillas Esther, that Chazal was sensitive to. Look at number two. Kimu, they accepted. The Kiblu HaYehudim, and the Jews accepted and received the days of Purim. But look how Kiblu is spelt. Kiblu is spelt Kibel. And Chazal was sensitive to this because it looks like a singular verb, just like Vayichan is a singular verb, and therefore they connected these issues very closely. And if you look here in number three, quite famously this Gemara in Shabbos, Vayisyatzvu b'tachtis ahar, they camped under the mountain, Amar Rav Avdimi Barchama Barchasa, Melamed shekav HaKadosh Baruch Hu aleihem es ahar kegiyis. God held the mountain over their head like a barrel, like a heavy weight. Ba'amalam, and he said to them, "Imatem mekablim haTorah Musa. If you are mekabel, if you receive the Torah, then it'll be okay. In love, but if not, shamtei kvaraskan, then you'll be buried there." Now, why is it there and not in here? I'm not getting into all of that. So, okay, we were forced to accept the Torah. What kind of a Kabbalah HaTorah is that? We had no choices. We had a gun to our heads. In a sense that the Nisim of Pesach, how could we choose otherwise? Going through the Red Sea, going to the mountain. Amar Rava replies, Afal PK, nevertheless, Hodr Kiblua B'Yemei Chashverosh. The Jewish people received the Torah properly, quote unquote, again in the times of Achashverosh. Dixiv, as it says, Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim. And again, when you read this Gemara, you don't realize that the word Kiblu is the singular form. Kimu Mashi Kiblu Kfar. There was a repeat at Purim of what they'd already accepted somewhat, in a somewhat forced way, in Shavuot, but Purim is the tikkun for that. And this idea, by the way, of achdus, is very critical of Purim. Today is not the forum for this, but many of the mitzvahs that we do on Purim are focused very strongly on achdus, on stressing that idea of the singular nature of the Jewish people coming together in order to go into Pesach. Think of the mitzvahs that we do. Kriyas HaMagila, together in a shul, needs a tzibur. You can do it on your own. It doesn't need a minion. It doesn't need a minion. Minion is for Kriyas HaTorah. It doesn't need 10 men, but it needs a tzibur. For this, a tzibur could be women, a whole community. Okay, that's because people have to come together. Matanas Levyonim, reaching out to those people who feel rejected normally, who feel unwanted, and saying, no, we're thinking about you. Mishloach Malas Ishlareehu, sending things each to the other, so that we can create actus within the Jewish people. Sudas Purim, it says in Sudas Purim in the Megillah, Mishpacha, Mishpacha, ear, people have to come together. You can't just sit, have a sandwich, you know, on your own in the corner. I mean, you can, but that's not what you're meant to do. So actus is a very, very key focus of Purim, and this reflects, as we see somehow in Kabbalah HaTorah. Now, of course, you have a question. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu held the mountain over our heads for Kabbalah HaTorah, how does that work with Naaseh V'Nishma? So look in Tosfos raises this question number 4. Kafa Alei Mahar Kegigit. V'af Al Pi Shekvar Higdimu Naaseh L'Nishma. Even though they'd already put Naaseh before Nishma. So the Tosfos wants to know, how does that work? So you tell me, did they accept the Torah willingly or grudgingly? Which was it? You can't have it both ways. Either it's Naaseh V'Nishma, which is keen, or it's that the mountain over their heads. So the Midrash deals with this. Tosfos wasn't the first person to ask this. Look in the Midrash in number 5. The Midrash Tanchuma says as follows: Loi kiblu Yisrael es haTorah asher kafa aleihem HaKadosh Baruch Hu zehakig yikis. The Jewish people only accepted the Torah when Hashem held the mountain over their head. Shneemar v'yitziyatu b'tachtis ha'har. Ah, v'amar avdimi barchama amar aleihem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael im mekabelim asem es haTorah mutar ve'im lav sham tiyeh kraska. This is the same Midrash that we saw before in the Gemara. Here is in Midrash Tanchuma. Now, but the Midrash then asks, Ve'im Tomar, and if you want to say, Al HaTorah Bichtav Kafa Aleihem HaTorah, if you want to say that they held the mountain over their heads for the written Torah, no. Halo Mishah She'am Alehem Mekablim HaTzenes HaTorah, Anu Kulam Va'amru Naaseh V'Nishma. For the written Torah, for the Chumash, the Jewish people said, yeah, we'll take it. We'll take 2. In fact, we'll take 5. Chumashim. Naaseh V'Nishma. Why? Mitnei she'ein ba yegiyah. Because it's not so hard. How complicated is it to read the parasha? That sounds great. But tzara, there's no tzara, there's no pain. There's no pain in learning Chumash. V'himat, and it's a little book. The Jewish people say, if that's all it is, Kabbalah HaTorah is this book? Oh yeah, we'll take it. Naaseh V'Nishma, that sounds great. Ala amalahen, but when God said to them, ala Torah sheba'al peh, no. It's a package deal. There's an oral Torah, and the oral Torah is immense. Sheyesh bo dikduke mitzvah, there's details. Kalas v'chamuras, kal v'chaymez, 7.5 years of jafyomi. That's what you've got to do. V'hi adze kamavet. It's like death. Plowing through the Torah Shabbat. V'kasha kesha'ol kinasa. This is from Shira Shirim. It's like Sha'ol. It's like hell. Going through Torah Shabbat, it's really tough. Lefisha ein loymed oisa ela misha oyeva kodesh baruch. You can only learn Torah Shabbat if you really love Hashem. If you really, your heart's in it. V'chol liboy, v'chol nashoy, v'chol ma'oido. Sh'ne'emah v'yahavte es Hashem elokecha, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nashcha, v'chol miyodecha. That the Jewish people said, not sure about that. No, we don't really want that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds the mountain over their heads, as it were, and says, sorry guys, you've got to have that too. And what choice did they have? At Purim, when they were mekabel the Torah properly, you see from here that means they were mekabel Torah Shabbat Peh. That's when they finally matured into a group that was prepared to be mekabel Torah Shabbat Peh. With all of the difficulties and the plowing through, because that's where they developed V'yahavta et Hashem Elokecha, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshcha, v'chol miyodecha. So when I say that Purim is a preparation in some way for tshuva mi ahava Pesach, you see why. There's something about tshuva, about Purim, connected with Torah, which is very related to Ahavat Hashem. By the way, on the Gemara, Mishenichnas Adar Marvin Besimcha, why is Adar Marvin Besimcha, says Rashi? Because it's nearly Pesach! That's why! Because Pesach is tshuva mi ahava, and the ahava already spills into Adar, just like the Yira spills into Elul, Slichas, etc. So Mishenichnas Arba Marvin Besimcha, it's not because of the crazy shtick. It's because Pesach's coming, and that gives us a sense of Ahava and excitement. Fine. Now, so I want to talk for about half an hour about something that I find very fascinating, which is this transition from Torah Shebichtav into Torah Shebaalpeh. What happened? That Purim represents, and by the way, that Chanukah represents the conclusion of. Chanukah is the ultimate acceptance of and full allegiance to Torah Shebaalpeh. And of course, historically, we're going to see this in a minute, in Reb Tzadok HaKohen, this is exactly the Tkufa, this is exactly the period where we transitioned from a nation of Tanakh to a nation of Talmud. The Talmud itself, of course, was later. But the beginning of the process of Torah Shebaalpeh is exactly Purim to Chanukah. Had a question? Yes. Well, I don't know. Did it? Does it? I don't know. Because I'll tell you something. I think Pesach has a bad rap because we have adjusted our living situation without adjusting it fully. Back in the day, a person either had one room and no money, in which case cleaning for Pesach took 3 hours and you were done, or you had a house with 20 rooms and a staff. If you had a house with 20 rooms, you had servants and you had guys and women. There was no situation where you had a big house and nobody to clean it for you. Now we have a situation where we have, Baruch Hashem, lots to clean, but no one to clean it. So I think that kind of adjusted a little bit. And of course, it's not sure about Pesach. I'm not going to let it get sidetracked into that. But you know and I know that people do far, far more than the halacha requires when it comes to Pesach, because all their neuroses about everything else become, you know, reflected onto Pesach. And actually, if you just did what the halacha requires, you know, Rabbonim every year gives shiurim about you don't have to do this and you don't have to do that. And they're the words are falling on deaf ears. Because people want to do, okay, so if you do what the halacha says, okay, the kitchen takes a while, because the kitchen's difficult, but the rest of the house, you can't do that in an afternoon, you know? Okay, if you've got toddlers running around putting, one of my students said, told me a story, this will give you sleepless nights, one of their little brothers, they had a baby brother, 3-4 years old, he thought he was a mailman, he wanted to be a mailman, little kid, bless him, and the whole year he practiced being a mailman, what was he mailing? He was mailing Cheerios into the air conditioning unit. He was putting them into the air conditioning unit. That was his day. Nobody knew. On Pesach, this was in America, the Chol HaMoed was hot. So they plugged in the air conditioning for the first time Chol HaMoed. And a dust of Cheerio Chomet shot across the whole house. Now, just imagine how calm you would be if that happened. And then project that on. So that's, I think, one of the reasons why. But anyway, we won't get into that now because it'll give us all nervous anxiety. So I want to talk about this transition. And by the way, let me let you in on a secret. This is not just a transition in the Jewish people. There is something that the academics call the axial age. An age where, within a 300-400 year period, people's mindsets all over the world shifted. From a mindset which was very connected to the gods and Nevuah and people speaking in their minds and heads, etc., to a new mindset which was much more self-sufficient, human-centric, philosophy-orientated, that the answers to our problems and issues come from inside rather than from outside. This was happening in China with Confucius, in India with Buddha, across the Greek world with Aristotle, Socrates, and Lahavdil was happening with us too, with Torah Shebichtav transition into Torah Shebaalpeh. There's something very interesting going on here. I want to scratch that surface a little bit and you'll see how it's related to Purim. Have a look please, number 6. Let's do this fairly quickly. Beyond Hashem and Moshe. So Moshe is told, Alei Alai Hahara, come up the mountain. Okay, we read this a couple of weeks ago in Mishpatim. Ve'ayesham, that's where you're going to be. Ve'etmalachan, here's what I'm going to give you. Here's a whole shopping list of things that Moshe's going to get. Et luchot ta'aven, you're going to get the luchot. Ve'ha-Torah and the Torah. Ve'ha-Mitzvah and the Mitzvah. Ashekatafti, which I've written, lahoratam, for you to teach them. Okay, that's a long list of things, not just the luchot. So the Gemara in Brachos in number 7 says, I'm a Rebbe Levi Bar Chama, I'm a Rebbe Shimon Ben Lakish, my dichtiv, what do all these things mean? The etna lacha I'm going to give you at luchot. Ha'even, v'ha Torah, v'ha mitzvah, shekatav de l'oratam. What are all those things? So luchot, that's easy. Elu has esaret a different. Okay, good. That's the Ten Commandments. Ha'Torah zemikra, that's the written Torah. Hamitzvah zomishna, that is the Mishnah, the oral Torah as well. Ashekasavti, which I've written, Elu Nevi'im Uksovim, these are the books of Tanakh. Lahorotam, for you to teach them, Zeh Talmud. Malamit Shekulam Nitnu LaMoshe Mitzinah. On some level, Moshe received everything at Sinai. Everything. Not just the Ten Commandments, but the whole of the written Torah, the whole of the oral Torah, the Talmud, etc. Even Tanakh. Now, if you think about this for more than a second, you'll realize this makes no sense at all. How could Moshe Rabbeinu possibly receive Tanakh at Har Sinai? Who wrote Sefer Yoshua? Yoshua? So if Moshe already had it, what's there to write? Moshe even received the whole Chumash? That makes no sense either. Moshe had a whole Chumash coming down Har Sinai? So why did he send out the spies? In Shlach Lecha? Just scroll forward to Parsha Shlach Lecha, check what it says, and just, that's a bad idea. Let's not do that. He didn't have a Chumash. That makes no sense. In fact, the Gemara says explicitly the Chumash was written at the end of the 40 years or in storms during, but not at Har Sinai. And as for the Talmud, the whole Talmud with all of the places and people and dates and things that happened thousands of years later, really, Moshe Rabbeinu had that? What does this mean? This is a Midrash. What does it mean? Even more so, number 8, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Omer, Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Agada, even the Midrashim, even what a bright Talmud would one day come up with a question. Somebody sitting in the audience today is just about to think of a great question. A really fundamental, wonderful question. No, Moshe Bessina, that's all been said before to Moshe. Ah, Matan, what's the reason? Yesh Dava, because there might be something, Shiyomer, the person might say, Re'ez Chadashu. I've come up with a new idea, it's a Chiddush. Chadash. His friend will turn around to him and say, nah, kfar hayala ilamim. It's a pasuk, yeah? Chadash? No, kfar hayala ilamim, it's ancient. You think you come up with anything new? There is nothing new. Really? There's nothing new? Ein chidushim? The whole Torah is just reading a script that we've already received from before. We feel that there is chidush, there is something new. There are new ideas that are coming all the time, and we'll see in a minute how the Gemara specifically relates to that. What does it mean that Moshe had everything? And yet, clearly there is an idea of chidush, of something new. So, we're going to try and explain how these things fit together by looking quite a lot at Rav Tzadok HaKohen. Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin was a fascinating character. He was a misnagid, a very staunch anti-chassid, if you like, in terms of his upbringing in the mid-1800s in the 19th century, and he underwent a conversion to Hasidus. There was a famous Shalasudus where he was persuaded to come and hear the Ishbitzer speak. So he said, no, I'm not going to hear no Hasidus or Rebbe's giving Vortlach, I'm not going to do that. They said, no, come, if you have such strong views, you should at least hear what he has to say. So he came, he stood at the back of the shul when the Ishbitzer was speaking, and suddenly he starts screaming, my head, the Ishbitzer is in my head, he's got into my head, and he suddenly has this, you know, epiphanal moment where he realizes that actually he's a chassid. And he becomes a chassid. And he has, of course, all the training of being a misnagid, which he then puts into his chassidus, which, if you think about it, it's a bit of a dream combination. And Rav Tzadok HaKohen becomes a very important figure. And one of the things that he was focused on during his life was this period, this transition from Torah Shebichtav, the Torah of Moshe, into Torah Shebaal Peh, and trying to work out what does it mean that Moshe has it, and yet later we discover it. How do those things come together? They're very deep ideas, but let's have a look at some of them. At least we'll skim the surface. Turn over, please, to page number 2. Let's have a look at number 9. So Rav Tzadok says the following. when did Torah Shabbal Peah really begin? Okay, so we read in the Gemara, no, it says Moshe Rabbeinu got the whole Talmud. It says no, not really. That's not what it means. Number 9. Hatchalat Torah Shabbal Peah haya bebayit sheni. Oral law, Torah Shabbal Peah, halacha, the way we know it today, began in Bayit Sheni. Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, which will come back to them soon, the men of the Great Assembly, which was a super Sanhedrin. Normally a Sanhedrin was 71. This was a Sanhedrin of 120, probably 121, to keep an odd number. A super Sanhedrin that they set up. Shehei Miyaste HaBayit. These were the people who set up the Second Temple. Hei Miyastu Gamkein HaTorah Shabbal Peah. And they also set up Torah Shabbal Peah. Now, don't forget, these people were at the same time as the Purim story. The Jews had already been given permission to come back to Eretz Yisrael when Mordechai and Esther are in Shushan Havira. It's not Babel. Babel already is over. This is Persia. And in fact, some wants to say that the Pasuk, the Ish Yehudi, and in Shushan is like a, is, how could that be? There were Jews still in Shushan when Koresh had already told them that you can pack up and come back to Eretz Yisrael. Why are there people still in Tilek? Sorry, people still in Shushan. Sorry, just a slip there. You know? Why are there people in London? Whatever. Why is that the case? And part of the whole narrative of the Megillah is dealing with that issue. But these people were setting up the Torah Shabbal Peah. Kamosha Amar Rabbi Yerushalmi, Ubi Yemei Mordechai, and he makes that link in the days of Mordechai Kimu Mashi Kiblu Kfar. This is happening, and he of course himself became one of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. We'll talk about that soon. Shechazer Lekabel HaTorah Me'ahava. Here's that word. They once again received the Torah Me'ahava. Shaloi Al Yidei Kfir Taka Gigis. It wasn't forced on them like at Sinai when the mountain was over their head. Kamosha Amru Az Zahu Lekach. That's when they really got Torah. Like we said before, they were really only forced to have the Torah in terms of Torah Shabbal Peah. Kamosha Amru B'Tanchuma, he quotes the Medrash Tanchuma, which we looked at. The Kol Zman Shaloi Kibluu Miritzonam. All the time that they didn't really accept the Torah willingly, Loi Nimsaru Adayin Lahem Lagamre. They haven't really Nimsaru Masorah. It hadn't really been passed on to them. All those years until Purim, they had Torah, but they didn't have Torah. It wasn't really in their hands. So what did they do? How did they manage? Says Reb Tzadik, a fundamental thing. V'hayu mitnagim al pi neviim. They would ask neviim, Hakol b'chtav miyat Hashem, as it says with David and Shlomo and the Mikdash, everything is comes down to them from Shamayim, on a plate, from the neviim. Now, you should know that this is a complicated issue, and the Rambam, we're not looking at the Rambam's approach today. But the Rambam, Maimonides, is extremely unhappy with this idea. He says, even during the time of the first temple, when there were Nevi'im, when there was Nevu'ah and Nevi'ot, that's not how halacha works. A Navi, if you were to go and ask Yeshaya HaNavi and say to him, what do you think I should do with my life? You know, should I be a doctor? Should I be a lawyer? What should I do? Should I live here? Should I marry this person? So good, that's the Navi, and that's what a Navi's for. He'll go into Navi mode and he'll give a perspective. But if you were to ask Yeshaya HaNavi, oi, I just dropped my fleshik spoon into my milchik washing up, again, my dishes, what should I do? So the Rambam says, if he goes into Navi mode, he's a Navi sheker. He may not do that. He can go into Rabbi mode, because Yeshaya was also a Chacham. He'd take off his Navi hat and go into Rabbi mode, say, now I can answer your Shaila, I'm offline. But if he goes online to answer through Nevuah, says the Rambam, Chayiv Misa, he's Navi Sheker. Rav Tzadok HaKen says, no, I don't agree with that. And by the way, neither does the Kuzari, and also the Ne'iri. These positions held that no, during the first temple, people conducted their halachic life through the Nevi'im. That's what the Nevi'im were there for, it was a hotline to God. But in a sense, it was an easy route. It's an easy route. The Jewish people, although I didn't bring all the Gemara's in Tzmura, when Moshe Rabbeinu died, they said to Yeshua, answer our questions, ask God. And Yeshua said, no, I can't ask God. There's Ein Navi Mechadish Davar Me'Asa. Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Rabbeinu, now you have to work it out yourself. Later the Gemara says, no, they asked Shmuel, you tell us, ask God what we should do. And Shmuel saying, no, you've got to work it out for yourself. Until eventually, Rav Tzadok HaKohen says, as it were, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know something? You're obviously not ready yet. How many Nevi'im were there from Moshe Rabbeinu to Shmuel HaNavi? A lot or very few? Very few! Which is why Shmuel HaNavi when he hears God saying Shmuel, Shmuel, nobody thought that that was Nevuah, right? The beginning of Sefer Shmuel. He goes to Eliyahu Cohen, saying, I can hear a voice calling to me. He says, no, you're having a dream. You're having a dream. Go back to sleep. Don't worry about it. Until eventually they realize, oh my goodness, this is Nevuah. This hasn't happened for generations properly. And that was a surprise. From the time of Shmuel, thousands. More than the number of people who came out of Yantuf. Navi, Navi, Neviyah, women, men, the next door neighbor, your sister-in-law, brother-in-law, everyone's a Navi. Why? Because Hashem was what gave in, says Rav Tzadok HaKohen. You need Nevuah? Can't you do it on your own? No, we don't want to do it on our own. We want you to tell us what to do. Okay, fine. On a spoon. You know, like a teenager. Or even, you know, less. I was standing by a window the other day, and one of my students, who's a 17-year-old girl, she said to me, Rabbi, is it raining? Why are you asking me? What's your problem? Look out of the window. You decide if it's raining or not. You need me to tell you if it's raining? There's a certain kind of immaturity and dependence. You know, you do it. You do it, please. You do it. I don't want to do it. That's the Nevuah approach. Just tell us what to do. We like it when it comes down straight from Hashem. That's easy, but it's not the way it's meant to be. Okay? Have a look in number 10. Says the Rav Tzadok, Afal pi shehayu chachamim, even though of course they had they great thinkers in the first temple. Gam kein, also mikol makom mipat shefa hanevuah, but it was the power of nevuah, the gilui shechina shehaya az b'Yisrael that the Jewish people had in those days. Lo haya nechshav hasaga derech chochma me'atzma. They weren't really getting it through chochma. Lekulam. Ki zeh hasaga mesupeket. Because if you have to work it out for yourself through chochma, oh, that's difficult. That's grey. The afela, that's dark. Mitzada olam hazeh, for us in this world, we don't like that. She'ein yoydim im hi hasaga amitid. We'll never really know if God said that, if that's right. You know, we're working all these halachas out. We say, you do this, you do that, you do this, and you have to eat that much and weather. Don't you ever have those kind of moments where you think, I don't know, is that Kodesh Baruch Hu looking down from Shemaim, saying, how could this go wrong? Like, why are they doing this? That's not what I wanted. That's not the intention. Everybody's wearing, I don't know, black, square, leather tefillin. They were meant to be pink, fluffy, and round. How do I know? That's the nature of Chochma is, I don't know, I have to work it out for myself. After 120 years, we'll know whether we got it right or not. But people don't like that. That's why it says about learning Gemara in Sanhedrin. You've taken me through dark places. Al Talmud Bavli. That's learning Gemara. To try and work out the truth through things which are hidden, and you begin to feel already the connection with the Megillah. Trying to work out what to do in a world which is confused. As Miriam mentioned before, that pasuk where Mordechai says to Esther, "Umi yodea," and who knows if it was for this? But for me, that's a remarkable pasuk. Who knows? Meaning, what would you say today if that happened? If the one woman who was in charge of the country happened to be an undercover Jewish agent who could save the day, you'd be screaming, "It's minat shamayim! It's minat clear as day!" No, Mordechai is like, I don't know, umi yodea. Maybe yes, maybe no, we don't know. Don't worry, it'll happen, we'll get a solid moment. But it's not clear. Nothing's clear. It's a world of lack of clarity. That's only later when it's dark. But in a time when there was a Shechina, Nevuah of Israel, they didn't get into those dark, difficult questions. Everybody was asking the Nevi'im, it's clear as day. Dahayu Nevi'im Kiflayim Kiyotze Mitzrayim. They were like double the number of Yotze Mitzrayim of Nevi'im. That's what you said, you were right, there were lots, there were millions of Nevi'im. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but it's a lot. Milvad Bale Ruach HaKodesh. Leave aside Ruach HaKodesh. La'ein Shir, there must have been unbelievable numbers. Elish Nevuah Shaloi Tzricha L'Doris. It just said, Nevuah that we didn't need for the future. Loi Nichtava, says the Gemara Megillah. That we don't have. We have 24 books of Tanakh. We have books of Nevi'im for what we need. But can you imagine how many more Nevi'im there were? Have a Kalahan Haga, the Nefisha, Haya Alpi Nevi'im. It was a life of clarity. You ask the Navi, they tell you what to do. It's kosher, it's great. And by the way, if you look in the Tanakh, it looks a little like this. Where are the rabbis? Who are the players in Sefer Malachim? the Melech, the Novi, yeah, the Kohanim. But where are the rabbis? Where is the Sanhedrin? Where are the Chachamim? So maybe, you know, they're behind the scenes. Maybe, though, they come to the fore in the Second Temple. Meaning, there was a Sanhedrin from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, Parshas Balotcha already. 70 Zekanim that come to help bear the burden of the people. But it's in the Second Temple. Look at the stories of Hanukkah. Who is it? It's the Rabbonim, it's the Chashmonaim, it's the Rabbis, it's the Sadducees, it's the Tzedukim, etc. It's all very Rabbi-oriented. And, of course, that's the shift that he's focusing on in this way. Let me show you a very important source, and then we'll understand this even more deeply. Have a look in number 12. Let's skip 11 for now. Look in number 12. This is a midrash that in Menachas that deals with this issue. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, v'sha she'ala Moshe l'Amaron. When Moshe went on high, he found a Kodesh Baruch Hu tying little crowns to the letters. You know, Shatner, Gaza, some letters, Shin, Ayin, Sadi, that have these little, one of my students called them eyelashes. These little eyelashes on the top of the letters. So, good. So God's tying crowns to the letters. Obviously this is midrashic. God's not physical, clearly. But this is an idea. The crowns, what are these crowns? Amar lefanav, Moshe says to Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, Mima akiv al yadcha, who's holding you back from giving the Torah without the crown? What does this mean? Little doodles. Little marks. Meaning the word is the same word with the crown, without the crowns. What are they for? So Amar lo, Hashem says to him, listen, Adam echad yesh she'atid lihiyos b'soif kamadoros. There's someone coming many, many generations from now. V'akiva ben Yosef Shmoy. He's called Akiva. This, of course, is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva lived around 1,500 years after Moshe. She'asid lidrosh al kol toit v'koit tilim tilim shal alochus. He will darshan. He will have the power of drash. He will be able to interpret, innovate. That's what drash is. It's innovation. It's looking, using the rules of interpretation, applying them to the psukim. He'll get tilim, tilim, heaps and heaps of halacha from this. Don't you think that these are just window dressing? These mean something. So Moshe says, well, if that's the case, I'm on the fun of Ribbono shel Olam. Heroli, show me this man. I need to see this man. So Amar lo, Hashem says to him, Chazor la'acharecha. Okay, turn around. It's incredibly dramatic. You could make a theater of this. So Hashem says, turn around. Curtain comes down. End of Act 1, Scene 1. People moving furniture behind the curtain. Okay, curtain comes up. Incidental music, etc. Halach v'yasha v'soy shmona shuros. Moshe then goes and sits on the eighth row. Where is he now? In Rabbi Akiva's Ben Midrash, 1,500 years in the future. Why is he on the eighth row? Who cares? Well, he's on the third row. No, the eighth row was a virtual row. There were seven rows. The eighth row is the row that doesn't exist. He's there as a virtual Talmud. The lot higher yodea ma heim oimim. He didn't understand a word they were talking about. Tashash kochein, he got very upset. Why was he upset? Because he's Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the Kabbal, the Torah at Sinai. Doesn't it say he got everything? He got Torah Shebichtav, he got Torah Shebalpeh. And he doesn't understand it. What's he thinking? They've messed it up. This is not what I got. This is not what God told me. How could this happen? So they're saying all of this new stuff, all these chidushim. Where are they from? So he's very upset. The crowd in the Bet Midrash got to one particular point. Amar loy Talmidav, and the Talmidim said to Rabbi Akiva, Rebbe, minayin lecha, where do you get this from? Amar lehem, he said to them, halacha la Moshe misinai. This comes from Moshe. Okay, now Moshe's happy. He still doesn't understand the word. Nityashva dato, so now he feels more relaxed. Why? What does he realize now? He realizes that halacha la Moshe misinai is not just people repeating the same thing every generation, but it's an evolutionary process. There's a development of halacha, there's drash. There are rabbis now trying to understand from the text how to work out what the halacha should be. It's not just coming from shamayim, like nevuah. It's a process of Torah Sheba'al Peh. So now he's happy. Chazo abalif ne'ak v'adosh baruch, he goes back to Hashem. Amar lefanav, and he says to him, Ribbono shel Olam, yeshlecha adam kazeh? So someone like this, he's amazing. Atanoitin Torah al yadai, you're giving the Torah to me? Give it to him! Amar lo, Hashem says to him, shtok, which is an unusual response. Kach al b'machshav lefanav. This is how I want it to be. This is, and by the way, this is almost like a coded expression, Allah b'machshava. I brought you a number 14 as well, the idea of creation. God, Allah b'machshava, the idea was to create it with din, he created it with rachamim. There's a lot more to say about this. But Chazal are very clear, number 13, Dvarim shaloi niglu l'moshe. Things that were not revealed to Moshe, niglu l'Rabbi Akiva. Were revealed to Rabbi Akiva and his chaverim. How could that be? Loikam k'moshe ad, right? There was nobody like Moshe. There was no Navi like Moshe. Yes. But there were other people who came later. Once Torah Sheba Al Peh became a reality, the received were understood more than Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's how Torah Shebichtav can be improved into Torah Sheba Al Peh. I didn't bring you this medrash, but there's a beautiful medrash that talks about where is it? Pikid Rabbi Lezer, I think. Eliyahu Zuta, excuse me. It's in Midrash Eliyahu Zuta. He says the following. Someone comes up to one of the Amoraim and says to him, I don't understand, you've changed all the Torah, you know. Torah Shebach Bichtav from Hashem, that I accept. But Torah Shebel Peh, the rabbis make it all up. How is that coming from God? So he responds to him and says, listen, let me give you a marshal. What is this like? Imagine a king gives a bag of wheat and a bundle of flax to two different avadim, two of his servants, and says, I'll come back in a week or two and pick it up again. So one of the servants takes the wheat and grinds it up and makes it into beautiful fine flour and baked pastries, and takes the flax and beats it and turns it into linen and makes a beautiful white tablecloth. And the other just puts it in the corner and leaves it as it is. 2 weeks later, the king comes back and says, show me what I gave you. One brings out a whole Danish table with pastries and beautiful linen, and the other one just gives him a bag of wheat and a bundle of flax. And the Midrash says, what an embarrassment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you that potential, and you just leave it in the corner of the room. You don't do anything with it. What a terrible embarrassment that is. That's the idea, that Torah Shebaal Peh actually is a, not just a development, but an improvement on some level on Torah Shebichtav. Which sounds very strange if you think about it, but that's the power of Torah Shebaal Peh. Of course, in Purim and Chanukah, this is expressed very succinctly. What is the liquid that most represents Purim? Wine. And what is the liquid that most represents Chanukah? Oil. Think about those two things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a grape. How can you improve on a grape? It's beautiful. It's so gorgeous. A grape. No. Inside the grape is something even better than the grape. If you, as a human being, if you process it and you ferment it, you can create something which is no longer Bereperi Haik, but it's Bereperi Hagoffin. It's an upgrade. If you take an olive, that's even more. So think about how much more Chanukah is even more developed there, about that. You take an olive, you don't just even squeeze olive oil out of the olive. You squeeze light out of the olive. That's incredible. There's light inside the olive? Yeah, didn't you realize? You thought it was an olive. Actually, it's a lamp. But you need to process it. That is the marshal of Torah Shebaal Peh on Purim and later on Chanukah as well. And that's what Rav Tzadik wants to say. Now, let's just move it, help it forward, and we'll get a little bit into Rav Kook in a minute. First of all, two more Chazals and then back to Rav Tzadik. Look at number 16. Let's skip number 15 for a second and look at number 16. Amar Rav Avdimi Demin Chaifa, says the Gemara, Miyom Shecharav Beit HaMikdash, this is the first temple, when the first temple was destroyed, Nitla Nevuah Min HaNevi'im. The Nevi'im stopped having Nevuah, we'll see exactly when that was in a minute, V'Nitla Chachamim, and the rabbis had the Nevuah instead. They had the insight. Atu Chachim Lav Navihu, you say, you're telling me the rabbis never had Nevuah? Says the Gemara, no. Hachikama, this is what it means. Afal Tisha Nitla Min HaNevi'im, even though the Nevi'im lost that link, that online link to God. Mina Chachamim loy nitla. The Chachamim didn't lose it. Why? Amar Ameima says from here, Chacham adif minavi. And this is something we're going to pick up on in a minute. A Chacham is greater than a Navi, which is expressing what we're saying. We'll see Rav Kook on Chacham adif minavi in a minute. Prophecy stops. Who was the last Navi? Malachi. Okay, Malachi, we read that last Nevuah for the Haftorah on Pesach. Hinene ani sholeach Eliyah hanavi b'yom ha'gadol v'anora. Yeah? That Eliyahu hanavi is coming is the last Nevuah. Then we go offline. Malachi is the last man. The last Navi. When did Nevuah finally come to an end? Because we said before, the Nevuahs that we have are the ones that we needed for the generation. But there were other Nevi'im as well. So look in Seder Olam Rabbah in 17. This is a fascinating thought. Seder Olam Rabbah was a midrash from the time of the Tanaim, from Chazal, a historical analysis of the way the world developed, the Jewish world. The Amad Melech Giborah Mashal Mimshal Rav, the Asikir Tano, the Daniel talks about this king who will come and do anything he wants. He will have so much power, he will have total control over the area. Who is this? Says Seder Olam Rabbah. Who? Alexandros Mokdon. This is Alexander of Macedonia. Shemarach Yudzei Shana, he was a king for 12 years. Now look what it adds. Ad kan hayu hanavim mitnavim beruach hakodesh. Up until then, the Nevi'im were giving Nevuah over. Mikan fa'elech, from Alexander onwards, hat asnecha, then put your ear closely, v'shmad divrei chachamim. Now listen to the chachamim. Alexander the Great never invaded Yerushalayim. He never sacked Yerushalayim. There's a famous story, right? Shimon HaTzadik, who was one of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, came out to greet Alexander, and Alexander saw him and says, you're the one I've been seeing in my dreams, etc. There was this connection, this positivity, to the point that they even called all the children Alexander, the first boys Alexander for the next year. This is our relationship with the Greeks, and as I said before, that's the end of Nevuah. Because, like I said, when the Greeks themselves turned from the world of the gods and fate to the world of the philosopher, which is a completely different mindset, this same thing, Lahavdil, was happening with us in exactly the same time in the transition from Torah Shebi'al Pav to Torah Shebi'al Peh. By the way, you should know, there is a theory, a psychological theory, I'm not a psychologist, but there is a theory which is put out there, that in the left-hand side of the brain, that's where all the speech, recognition and development, that's where it all happens, in the left hemisphere of the brain. The right hemisphere of the brain has all the infrastructure to do that, but it doesn't do anything. If, God forbid, a child has a lesion in the brain and the left side is destroyed, then he can switch and they can do it on the right and develop it. But a regular person who does not have that trauma, so the left side is where all the speech happens, it's where you speak to yourself before you speak. Because don't forget, before you say anything, you first say it to yourself, and then you say it. It's all sort of planned nanoseconds in advance in your brain, and then it comes out. But the right side could do this, but doesn't do this. So what's it for? So it comes along this particular, I can't remember who it was now, I can send you an email where, you know, if you're interested. And he says, he posits, this academic, that actually up until a certain point in history, both sides of the brain were doing the same thing. One side was you speaking to yourself and then saying, and the other side was the divine world speaking to you through that side of the brain. And there were two voices in your head all the time, if you were tuned in. There was the left brain voice, which is your voice, and there was the right brain voice, which is God's voice. And at a certain point in history, for whatever reason, the right brain side shut down, and the left brain side kept on, which means that from now on it's a monologue with yourself, rather than a dialogue between you and God. Now, because you may turn around and say, this sounds like nonsense, how could that happen, it doesn't make any sense, and maybe you're right, I don't know, I'm not an academic in the field, but this was proposed by a serious person. Interesting, no? I think that's quite interesting. If you want to know more about that, I'll send you an article about it. But something changed. Have a look at one more Rav Tzadok, and then we'll get into Rav Kook. Look at number 18. Al derech sha'amru chacham adit minavi. What does it mean, chacham adit minavi? This is the inspiration of the rabbis. They didn't lose that. As we see in the Gemara, now this is very beautiful. This, of course, is smaller than Nevuah. Who is more in tune with God? A Navi or a rabbi? A Navi? Navi, they have their online. The rabbi is smaller than the Navi. The imkol sehi adifa, but it's better. There's an advantage to that. The Hainishi Cholim Lahasigba, the Al Yada Hasaga Gvot Yoter, the rabbi, even though they are on a lower objective level, they can reach higher. Kamoy de Ita, as it says, our posting for Kol Yakara Atenav, the Dvarim Shalai Niglu Moshe Rabbeinu, Alav Shalom Niglu Rabbi Akiva Bachareva, like we said. The Rabbi Akiva was able to achieve things that Moshe couldn't achieve. Why? says a beautiful idea. If you have a smaller individual understanding, that can actually become a deeper and broader understanding at the same time. Ki eshev b'choshech, dafka az Hashem orli. The pasuk says, because I sit in the dark, Hashem is a light to me. It's dafka. The darker it is, the more impactful even a tiny light can be. A candle in broad daylight makes no impact. A candle in a completely dark room changes the world. Changes your whole understanding. She'ochel ha'hasig or Hashem mamash ma'she'i'eshel ha'hasig mitzad ha'behirat v'ha'or she'be'itgalut ha'leif. In a time of nevuah, people can't penetrate through that little light. Di'eshel ha'hasig the toki v'or me'ke'ein'e'ga'aleif, because the light blinds you. About ha'yoshif v'choshif, if you're sitting in the dark, then it's better. And later on he talks about the idea of dwarves on the shoulders of giants. That's not Rav Tzadok's line, by the way. Many people use that line. Isaac Newton used that line. But he said, even if you say that each generation can be smaller than the last, they sit on the shoulders of the people that came before, and they build on that rather than have to start the whole thing again. Yes?
If that's the case, why was Adam punished for having the same philosophy?
Okay, I'm not getting into the whole idea, because maybe it's too soon. That's part of the whole thing. There's an idea in Chassidus, by the way, that Adam was meant to eat from the fruit. He was meant to eat from the fruit, but he was meant to eat from the fruit on Shabbos, and he couldn't wait till Shabbos. He had to eat from the fruit on Friday. And therefore, it's not clear that Adam is punished for what he did. He's punished for when he did it, possibly. It's very interesting. It's like a child who wants to be a grown-up before they can be a grown-up. If you think about it, Gan Eden feels like childhood, no? People walking around and where everything's done for them, they don't wear clothes and they don't feel embarrassed. It's like a metaphor for childhood. And the teenager who wants to be grown up before they're really able to be, so that's the chet in that sense. You wait till Shabbos, you can be. Yes?
Is that why Hanukkah
right. There's no moon, you mean? There's no moon at all. And not only is midwinter, the whole of Hanukkah represents darkness in its extreme. It's the darkest point of the year, the darkest point of the month. And that's when the light of the Torah Shabbat Peh is the strongest. Let's go back to Purim, because it's not Hanukkah yet. But let's just finish for 3 or 4 minutes on Purim, and I'll mention the Rav Kook, and you can look at it more in your own time. That's why, if you look on page 4, please, this transition, number 22, Moshe Kibbol Torah Misina, Umasra Yeshua, Yeshua L'Zakeinu, Zakeinu L'Nevi'im, U'Nevi'im Masra L'Anshek Nes Adiyala. There was a transition from the Nevi'im to the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Who was the last Navi? What did we say? Malachi. Look at number 23. Amar Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman in the Gemara in Megillah, Malachi Ze Mordechai. Malachi Ze Mordechai. Lama Nikrishmo Malachi. Why is he called Malachi? Shehaya Mishneh LeMelech. He was like a Malach. He was the Malach to Achashverosh. Achashverosh was the Melech. He was the second. He was the Malach. That's why Mordechai is Malachi. Okay, the Gemara debates. Was he really? Was it Ezra? Da, 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 da. But the point of this idea is that you see that the man himself represents the transition. Part of him was like the end of Nevuah. Part of him was the beginning of the Chochmah and Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Have a look at number 25. Lamanatech al Ayelet Hashachar. And this is where the thing actually, in many ways, comes to life. Esther. Esther, who of course represents the morning star, the beginning of something new, the beginning of the day, phosphorus, Astarte, the Esther is an ancient Persian name. Of course the Hebrew name wasn't Esther, was it? Hadassah, that's a Hebrew name. That's a Jewish word, Hadass, is a Jewish word. Esther is from, like Mordechai, is Marduk. It's from the ancient world. All of the names of the months that we have are all Persian Avodah Zorah names, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, etc. Why we use Avodah Zorah names for the month? That's a good question. That's a different shir. The Ramban talks about that. Yaakov Kamenetsky talks about that. But Esther, Ayelet HaShachar, Amar of Asi, Lama Nimshala Esther LaShachar. Why is Esther like the beginning of the day? Lama Lachar, to teach you, Ma Shachar, Sot Kol HaLaila, just like the morning is the end of a long period of night. Af Esther Sot Kol HaNisim. So Esther is the end of Nisim. Nissen meaning God does it for you on a plate. Just, if you have a problem, just stab him, the Navi will help you, and Nathan will happen, it will all be fine. Esther is the beginning of a new world. A world where you can't just say, oh, someone else should do it for me. Where you have to work it out for yourself. Where you have to get your hands dirty. Where you have to get into Chochmah. Where you have to develop Perush Baal Peh. And the irony is, and the wonderful thing is, that you think that that's going from light into darkness. Actually, that's going from night into day. Because now you really are Mekabel the Torah. Now you really have a Masorah. Because now you're really taking it and running with it like a grown-up. And this is why Chacham Adif Minavi, and therefore Esther represents not the beginning of the night, but the beginning of the day. Because it might feel like a lot of hard work. But boy, once you get into it, it's inspirational and enriching and empowering. Rav Cook, I'll leave you to read on your own. We could spend a whole share. He talks about this. I'll just outline what he says, and you can look at it. It's quite a well-known piece of his Chacham Adif Minavi. He talks about how amazing the Nevi'im were, how their breadth of vision and their big picture thinking, big, what do they call it, blue sky thinking. They captured all the big ideas, and you know something? It didn't work. Nobody listened. And even if they listened, it was too grand. It was too big. Because the real change, says Rav Cook, that people make in their lives is not commitment to big ideas like, let's do social justice, let's get rid of Gezel, they're very important. But the real change comes with 1,000 tiny little changes in the way that you run your life, another bracha here, another detail there. That, says Rav Cook, is why Chacham Adif Minavi. Because the Chachamim came and said, you know something, those beautiful big ideas of Yeshaya, Yechezkel, Yirmiyahu? Let's put them into a practical, daily, halachic framework, and then they'll actually make an impact. Now, of course, the danger of that is you become obsessed with the details and you forget the big picture, which is what happened in the Second Temple, where you have people at the end of the Second Temple who were so obsessed with the details of Tumah and Tahara, etc., that they just lost all sight of Sinas Chinam, of social justice, etc. And they could be bringing korbanos and yet oppressing other people the next day, etc. Okay, you've got to have a balance. And Rav Cook says, we needed the Chachamim to bring in this idea of the detail, but he says, eventually, when we go back to Eretz Yisrael, says Rav Cook, we'll come back to a Nevuah as well, and we'll be able to combine the two in the most in the most constructive way forward. And you'll have the Chachamim and the Nevi'im together in a way which goes forward. And all of this is important. Okay? This idea of this transition to a position of being much more grown up and much more responsible, this is in many ways the simcha, this is the tshuva mi'ahava. And I find personally this whole period fascinating, and hopefully you've got some insight into that as well. There's far more to say, there's more sources on the sheet that we didn't go through, but hopefully that will give us some ideas to think about. And again, thank you very much for being here and inviting me. And I wish you all a Freilich and Adar. One of my neighbors from Hanoch, Rav Benji Levine, Rav Ariel Levine, he always says his father used to say a Freilich and Pesach, because he says people need the Freilich on Pesach, but for Purim Chag Kosher V'Sameach, because they need, for Purim they need the Kashrus. So I'll leave you with that. I think it's a good vote.